That is Beethoven Romance by the Charlotte Symphony, played as a stream yesterday in the Blumenthal Theater in Charlotte, North Carolina, 2021. Good morning. This is Tim Froward's reading, broadcasting from Mississippi Avenue. And what a great way to start kind of a relaxed Sunday morning as I go through shenanigans of the week, honoring Black excellence and just excellence across nationalities, really, and enjoying more of this music by the great Charlotte Symphony. And also, I'll be ending with the reading from listeners. I've come right along with that. And what if, just once, what if I were holding a golden ticket? Well, at least the listening audience is holding the golden ticket to entertainment if you're listening to this podcast. And with that, I thank you for listening. That is not the Charlotte Symphony. That is Midori, the famed Japanese violinist, playing Beethoven's concerto. This one actually is Romance Number 2 in F major. And a bit of the history and background of this particular piece. I'm reading from the Beethoven site of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. Although both of those, the Romance Number 1 violin in G major and the Romance Number 2 violin in F major, both were published in 1803 and 1805 respectively, the scholars believe that Beethoven's two violin romances were probably written earlier. And it, although it's despite its label as number two, the romance in F major was probably the first to be composed, probably in 1798. This was during a time when Beethoven was actually still in his 20s, making his way in a world that was dominated by Mozart. This particular quality of this piece, it's kind of like an old school hymn with the violinist being the soloist. And in the background, you feel the soaring of the choir, and they come together in one great melody. That's me talking. That's not whoever wrote the piece for the Baltimore Symphony. You can see it. You can hear it. Even though I have it turned down, listen to this. It's like the oboes and the violas are answering the call of the particular violin. And truly, even though there are no words, it's absolutely, you can hear this particular violin just singing. And I love it because music should elevate you, and this particular piece does elevate. As the melodies converge and soar, you can't feel anything but happy. I'm gonna let y'all enjoy the rest of this piece. What is this all about? This actually just to me has to do with another great way to discuss Black excellence. This past week has been one of those weeks where everybody was just doing great things. And Felicia Rashad has just been appointed as the Dean of Dramatic Arts at Howard. How great is that? And I love getting this email from the Black Excellence Weekly Roundup. The student that received a $50,000 scholarship from Drake, she graduated this week with her master's, and that's big shout out to Destiny Parrish James. I'm in South Carolina native. Tillin Bailey was a janitor at Hightower Elementary School in DeKalb. This is right down the road from me in Georgia. He just graduated with his teaching degree after 23 years of working as a janitor. Big ups to him. Rest in power to the comedic icon of Paul Mooney. He passed away at 79 years old. He wrote for Sanford and Son and Richard Pryor. He was the laughing voice of America. And the 89-year-old Virginia math tutor, Miss Dolores Spencer, has gone international with her online virtual tutoring lessons. She retired after 20 years of being a full-time teacher, and then went back about 30, 40 years ago, for the last 20, 30 years, teaching, doing tutoring, and has upped her game in the international sense by being an online tutor, and she's got international clients. As I said, this week was one of great victory for us, and so much to celebrate. So big ups to everyone highlighted in the Black Excellence. Y'all kept us laughing. You're doing great things, and your future is bright. Now, more from Beethoven. That is the Allegro from Symphony No. 5 in B-flat by Franz Schubert. This was also played, this particular symphony was actually played, or symphonic rendition was actually played in its entirety this past evening by the Charlotte Symphony. This was more, I think it was more beautifully rendered by the Vienna Philharmonic, conducted by Claudio Abbado in 2018. It seems like there was a full orchestral complement. It seems like the Charlotte Symphony was pared down because of the pandemic. But I think they did an amazing job. It's just that this plays better from my iTunes account as far as when I'm doing the recording. And the more I research and the more I learn about these maestros, I'm learning a lot that I wanted to share with the listening audience. I had no idea the late 18th, early 19th century was such an amazing time for orchestra and classical music. I mean, when you think about it, there were plays, there was opera. Within about a 50 to 75 year period, Mozart, Beethoven, and then the young Schubert were alive. And they created some amazing works that set the musical world basically literally on its ear. During 1816, Schubert was busy composing 200 compositions, a mass, several sacred choral works, and his fourth and fifth symphonies, an overture, two works for the violin and an orchestra, string quartets, and he did all of this before he turned 19. He hated school. He dropped out at 16. He had a group of friends that he had met at school while he also performed in the Imperial Royal Court Chapel. A lot of his friends were prosperous from upper middle class backgrounds, and he had a decidedly poor background with his father being a school teacher. A lot of his works were probably initially only heard by his friends in apartments. And he was truly a Mozart stan. They said that if Beethoven had not happened, this is what would have happened to the future of music. You know, and they were referring to Schubert. He didn't really imitate. He didn't basically follow Beethoven's innovation, which would set music on a different plane. He had his own innovations that would follow in the tradition of Mozart. His music itself crescendos, there's complexity, and it starts slow and then it soars. It is the type, again, it's like the music is singing, but there are no words. You just get caught up in the rhapsody of it all. It's always light because I really like period pieces like Pride and Prejudice and most recently Bridgerton. And this, it just seems that I've heard this music before. It's basically always played on the background of these compositions. And it's absolutely quite soothing. And I'm going to just allow you to enjoy it more without me chatting over it. Again, this is the Vienna Symphony. Franz Schubert's Allegro. in major D. This is more from our Mozart fanboy, Franz Schubert, from his Symphony No. 5 in B flat major. This is the Andante con. Hold on for a minute. And I just saw this. I know I'm so stupid. And ebonically. Limited, but this is the Andante con moto from, it's like that second movement, I guess. And the more I, you know, prepare for this podcast, I'm learning, almost learning different language. And that particular means slowly but with motion. This is direction informs the performer that whilst the music should be slow, it should not be so slow that things grind to a halt. The second term in music, it's still lively and in motion, but not really too fast. It looks, or it appears to me when I listen, the more I listen to it, you wouldn't waltz to this. You would just basically sway. It has a symphonic or a hymnal, traditional hymnal kind of rhythm to it. But it definitely does get you in the mood. And it's a great place to start as far as this part of the podcast, because I don't want to really slow it down, because what I'm going speaking of is the celebration of Black-owned businesses throughout Tennessee, including my own. Even though my podcast is a passion product or a passion project, I'm hopeful that one day that it will garner the kind of attention that other international or national podcasts garner, just because I'm going to be in a better position to create even better content. And the struggle is real, y'all, especially for small businesses and Black-owned small businesses throughout the country. We've saw a lot of contraction in small businesses internationally and nationally because of the pandemic. But even in spite of the pandemic, we've had a proliferation of Black-owned businesses in the country. We got businesses like funds like 1 Million Black Girls that are dedicated to contributing money to African-American females as they get on their feet and they excel. There is the Small Business Bureau. There are companies like Wells Fargo that are not just trying to check the box, that they are approving everyone, but they also are approving, and it's easier to get financing. Probably now more than ever before, there's a lot of content in these streaming services that are really dedicated, not just giving lip service to bringing us a more diverse and very entertaining, theater, etc. But these Black-owned businesses throughout Chattanooga and the Tennessee Valley, there's All Goods Coffee Shop and Used Books. I'm actually going to attempt to navigate back to, there was a comment about Winder's Used Book and Chad's Records. Evidently, a microaggression was perpetrated against a Black patron, and she wrote them a 2-star scathing review online. And I'm going to hopefully, I don't know how often the person whoever wrote it checks that, but there is an All Goods Coffee Shop and Used Books that's right in the south side of town. There's Chatty's Restaurant that I get my go-to for fried pork chops. There's Uncle Larry's Restaurant. Uncle Nearest 1884 is a premium whiskey right in Lynchburg next to, this is a slave that I think Jack Daniels may have stolen his whiskey recipe from, but neither here nor there, because this is Black female owned. She actually created it, and it's been making award-winning whiskey, premium whiskey, since 2019 at its inception. There is the Crab Trap, a seafood takeout restaurant over, I think this is, they're located in Brainerd now. There's Blue Orleans. I think this place is still open. They got a pay check protection loan that actually is keeping them open and serving up that Deep South New Orleans cuisine. There's Herman's Soul Food and Catering. I think their fish is better than Uncle Larry's. I'm just saying. Even with the smack'em sauce that they keep forgetting to put in my bag. Chat Smokehouse. It is not Chat Smokehouse. That they recently, one of the owners passed away. It was not them. And then I wanted to just land on the perfect turtle design by Philip Ashley. This is a chocolatier that's located in Memphis, Tennessee, that Oprah mentioned on her 2020, or I don't know if she did it on 2021, but some of her favorite things in the decadence of these premium chocolates. And these, you have to get waitlisted to get their 4-ounce turtles. It's on lock, and they absolutely have different truffles and a variety of decadent chocolates. And it's right here in Tennessee. And if you really are interested in it, there's also, I'm going to be adding to this collage in the upcoming weeks, because I'm interested in just featuring and talking and testing some of these Black-owned businesses. If I read in the New York Times today that, and I'm going to have to go through and probably sign up for it and figure out how this other African-American female, she's a stylist to the stars, how she actually has created, and she features Black-owned businesses for Chicago. She highlights it. And there is, the way the page is set up, there's actually an associated account, and it talks about us. I'm basically using this Black-owned business retail page to not only just to feature, of course, Tennessee-based and local-based businesses and ventures, but also somehow there is an account that is associated with it. And I'm actually excited because I have a camp account in developing a Black-owned business to see that. So that is going to be absolutely fun. I can already see a black t-shirt with the white outline of Tennessee. What kind of with Black Lives Matters, because I don't really like the flag, the Tennessee flag, because of the connotation. It looks way too close to the Confederate flag. But I will actually put some Black-owned business, Black Lives Matters merch on it, because I can do that. The creativity, I don't think I'm a creative person, but given the opportunity now that I can think and I can relax, and I can take the time to use those creative juices, because if I can't draw, I can at least use technology to assist me in creating these things. And that site, it is an e-commerce site, Black owned everything. It is, in itself, a challenge. And just the concept of a location where you can actually potentially buy and see all of the new Black-owned businesses, and also you get a chance to actually, sometimes if you are good enough at it, you get to sample this stuff, which I think is pretty awesome. So navigate to the podcast notes on my blog, Dale's Angels Inc., to see who I've actually featured, and also partake and support Black-owned businesses. The struggle is real, and we can support ourselves, and we can continue to show the world that we can prosper, even when you pass whacked butt voting restriction laws, and you get all up in our uteruses, and you try to malign our transgendered youth. This is a way we can support our community, and also support our community and celebrate the creation of us. All about us, for us. How awesome is that, y'all? Thank you. This is the Allegro Vivace from Symphony No. 5 in B flat major, again by the fanboy of Mozart, Franz Schubert. Allegro, I had to look this up too, y'all. Evidently I didn't pay too much attention in music appreciation, but Allegro just means really fast paced. And it would be this particular movement, of course, or the ending that would speed it up because it's getting ready to crescendo to the end of the symphony, it makes sense. I really enjoyed the symphonic stylings of the Charlotte Symphony. And I've definitely enjoyed bringing this to you. Today has been really productive. I've not only created and uploaded content or created a page, which I'm hopeful I'm going to be satisfied with the notes on my blog, Celebrating Black-Owned Businesses. I was actually able to update my chatterbooks, my online bookstore. I've added works by Chris Bosh of All People. He was an NBA All-Star that played for the Miami Heat. He mentioned some of the books that he actually read, like The Power of Mamba, Kobe Bryant's book. He was just recently inducted into the NBA Hall of Fame. I actually also added Katherine Johnson's biography, My Remarkable Journey, Letters to a Young Poet. I'm sorry, Chris Bosh's book is called Letters to a Young Athlete. I did some editorial work on another book, which really, truly does sound familiar. I'm going to have to look that up. I also added Amanda Gorman's book to Teenage and Young Adult, and I've also made a real effort. It seems like it was really just really good this week. The book review of the New York Times, I was able to add Memory Jars, as well as Off to the Sea by Nikki Grimes. This was a great reading week as far as the New York Times go, and just in general, talking about the reconfiguration of museums in this post-pandemic apocalypse. And also, I've been watching a lot of stuff online. The Upshaws that features Kim Fields and old drunks looking Mike Epps and Wanda Sykes, as well as Girls Five Ever, that's actually on Peacock. There's actually a lot of content that's actually released this past. Oh, and Angelina Jolie's movie was actually kind of about 3 to 4 stars too. I like the storyline. I like the fast pace of it. And it goes that I'm playing Schubert's Allegro with this fast, because all of those things were really fast paced. And I hope me being able to just talk about that would be helpful. I've also published this week. I'm such a foodie, and I'm a fat girl that loves to eat. The Times Free Press on Wednesday, they publish recipes. And this week, I actually tried the Japanese fried chicken, or karaji, which I know I'm hacking up that name. And I made some homemade pesto. You can actually watch the YouTube video and see if you would be interested in making it, or just enjoy the food porn, or whatever you would like to call it. And again, thank you for listening, and let's listen to a little bit more Schubert, shall we? That's the incomparable Level Up by Sierra from a single. I think she dropped this, I don't know, 2019, 2020. She hadn't done anything for a minute, just enjoying her life with Russell Simmons and her beautiful kids. So enjoy this just for a minute as I go into reading of listeners. By yours truly. This view is so much better. I'm chilling, I'm winning, like on another level. You can talk all you want. As I started writing my book, I realized one very important thing that I did not want. I initially did not want to really do anything about post-apocalyptic COVID because I felt that there were going to be a lot of other works very similar to that. But you can't get away from the fact how COVID made me a hermit, or it just allowed me to be a hermit. I did like blog posts and I did continue to publish my podcast, but doing a part two of my autobiographical fictional work, that's still in the works, and I probably will republish that under another cover because I do believe that Author House is in essence a pyramid scheme. It's a scheme, and maybe one day I'll be able to get a real literary agent, but until then I'll continue to work on it as well as other works, and that's where listeners come in. I started publishing it on my blog. But then as I started getting all the words out, and then I'm going through the rewriting process and sussing it out and adding and rearranging it. And the past week, I've gotten what I believe is two chapters that I've revamped and actually renamed. And I'm going to be reading from you those two chapters today. Humanity 1, Replacement 0. Life would go on. COVID and all the waves of contagion had to be stopped. Once crowded cities became virtual ghost towns, first by death and then by the power grid collapse. The real army would get generators online at these remote command posts, but the power stations would remain offline because COVID had killed many of the operators. The freeze would extend down into the northern Maryland and Washington, D.C., only spared because martial law had created an all-military zone. The military was firmly under the direction of the newly formed separatist government with explicit direction of securing the borders, air, water, and land, with interstate transportation restricted to essential personnel. Food, medicine, and all essentials. Displaced northern citizens and COVID survivors were housed in FEMA trailers and other RVs. The intellectuals and creative began emerging like the cicadas after a 17-year hiatus, very noisy, but with a new purpose. For a while, the unruly individualist voices and sole purpose disappeared as the system and the extension of humanity was made clear. As the presidential cabinet was tried and charged with high state crimes, the replaced governors and state politicians were being rounded up, submitted before local tribunals, and restitution being meted out for the crimes, primarily of dereliction of duty and just plain stupidity. The most shocking was the on-air raid on the White House as the then president was presenting his daily lies of the security of the country. The same agent that escorted Felicity to West Virginia led the team that jumped onto the West Lawn, kicking open the doors and apprehending the president on air. He screams and struggles with his cheap toupee askew. "I am your supreme leader. Let me go. Let me go. There will be hell to pay when my son and daughter sees this." The agent calmly says, "They will be watching from a cell in West Virginia." They hear clapping, and in comes the Speaker of the House. "What we have is a failure of understanding. Martial law has been declared, and you are removed from office. For your role in the failure of leadership and treasonous collaboration with the replacement entity and willful ignorance to the rule of law, you're placed under arrest. The charge is treason." Traitor in charge. "You can't do this. I am the supreme leader. I am the supreme leader." The separatist speaker. "You are the supreme douche and never a leader. Get him out of here," she orders. They half drag, half carry the former president, reduced to a blubbering idiot, not too different from usual. She takes up the microphone. "Fellow Americans, my sincerest apologies. Due to unforeseen circumstances, martial law has been declared and the 25th Amendment has been invoked with the immediate removal of the president. For his moronic lack of leadership and treasonous action as regard to our national security with his collaboration with the replacement entities. And the pandemic could have annihilated humanity. His actions and inactions endangered us all, with his supporters allowing the treachery. They are all being remanded to federal prison with a complete restructuring of both House and Senate and state governance. As per the law, I am now the President of the U.S. and the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. One of the two surviving members will govern until elections can be held. Our infrastructure is in disrepair, with our financial systems in shambles. However, our borders are secure with a healthy military. As we assess and repair the mismanagement of the last 3.5 years, we'll be continue to update the nation on this channel. As we repair the power grid, we hope that other competing news agencies and entertainment will come back online. But for now, the news and updates will be filtered through this channel. We will get through this. We will survive in cooperation. I pray for your safety and resilience. God bless you all, and God bless America. The pandemic and cold-worn population had learned to make do. The factual confirmation by the separatist government was not at all unexpected. When the sycophant governors bailed on the state populace, county government stepped in to support and carry on even when the government did not. Unable to face their constituents, some attempted to flee, but they were apprehended and brought back to face the tribunals of their home states. The panic experienced as the power went out in the Northeast, and with the high death rate due to COVID, the Middle Atlantic states initially spared, but with the technological and computational power of Afro-Druids and then the manufacturing being relocated south, a microbiologic defense to the scourge was set. With the national quarantine being enforced and no essential movements besides the military, it is what stopped the spread of the contagion. Despite the emptying of the conventional grocery stores, farmers markets thrive alongside food co-ops. Rural America, in addition to the marijuana growth industry with expertise in water saving and true organic growth technology, kept the nation fed. Smaller population of herds and grass finishing cattle and non-CAFO chickens and even pork, home canning and preservation became a reality. With the end of federal and state unemployment, a rationing system was instituted and funded by cryptocurrency. NIH and CDC, in collaboration with the WHO and Oxford scientists, will collaborate and take over the manufacturing of testing and vaccine development, with the military spearheading the worldwide distribution. The rebuilding of the nation and the world is a slow and arduous process. We would balance true science and innovation because this is what was required for humanity's survival. We would balance true science and innovation with humanity's survival. Everyone on each continent gathered together, irrespective of governments, because none existed in the conventional sense. The most remote village on each continent, now accessible with drone technology and energy by solar, out of necessity. There were so few survivors in major city after the first wave of COVID that many cities became large graveyards. The macabre cleanup would take months. Only the strong and open would be reached by medical staff, vaccinated or treated. The most receptive and enlightened would be trained to use the technology as the groups gathered to pool supplies and knowledge. The rebuilding was not instantaneous, greed and avarice raising its ugly head whenever. Humanity could never be sure all the replacements had been found and eradicated. Actually, I think it's spelled with the E. A system of formal material exchange with an ethical financial system was still necessary in this new world. Cryptocurrency was how society financed the exchange of precious metal with carbon-based stones valuable in their usage and communication and energy transmission. Except in the reemergence of theater and drag, luxury goods became nonsensical and unnecessary. The new world order would be resisted with pockets of unrest flaring across the globe. Riots would flare in Great Britain, across Europe, in protest of the royal family, with the same across the Middle East and the Saudi royal family. It was apparent that the message was misinterpreted by Christianity for centuries, and the elevation of these families was a mistake. Their genetics did not confer them any more special consideration than any other human. Their survival depended on their ability to integrate into the new society as quickly as possible. To the shock of the world, the Egyptian secular population, Syrian rebels, Palestinian Hamas, and Hasidic youths would engage each other for peace. They, spared the indignity of suffocating from COVID, knew that peace had to reign in their country. Again, the old insults and retaliation forgotten once the source of conflicts. Replacement interference was known. Most of the men died in generational conflicts. The women took up this final piece. There still was resistance from the most replaced nations. Deep in Siberia and northernmost Korean peninsula, and initially the southern tip of India, resisted the interstellar effort to eradicate the replacements, and these nations cut off from communications from the rest of the world, but became safe havens for hacker defectors willing to steal technology and other ridiculous former U.S., British, and South American despots who did not want this new order and revel in the lies and deceit of a grander time of false importance and supremacy. Having neither the skills nor the inclination to build a solvent society would be costly when the resources of the world cut off. Southern Hindu continent would slowly join the new world order. COVID put everything on pause. The cure was known and on the shelf in the CDC lab next to the smallpox and Ebola vaccines. Atlanta and many other states neighboring Tennessee had power due to its proximity to Sweetwater and the dam. While the political shenanigans stoking the financial market and diverting funds to support military actions of dictatorships and further replacements in the Middle East stalled the actual management of the pandemic, real work and treatments and finalizing tests on an effective vaccine continued without government interference. The mayors of Jacksonville, Florida, Atlanta, Georgia, Sweetwater, Tennessee, Mobile, Alabama, Beckettsville, West Virginia, and Savannah, Georgia, all African-American women, understood the gravity of the situation. They were open to communication with aliens and cooperation with the separatist government. They all were active on the dark web, not trusting the government news agency, especially the Tennessee and Atlanta population when CNN went dark. the importance of factual information with provisions provided to the population would be key to survival, but knowing their cooperation was necessary for the survival of humanity. Safe food, shelter, and clean water is the right of all, and in a civilized society should be provided. The replacement eradication and then the COVID scourge would leave not many untouched. Survivors would be in the military who were the first vaccinated with responses recorded. The separatist government first surviving the coup attempt and then COVID. Every member of Astro Jewett, state tribunal governments, every federal prison, COVID ran unchecked through the prison population with less than 10% surviving. The few finally vaccinated with nonviolent offender tasked with the military to rebuild roads, repair bridges, and restart and repair the power grid. The inhumane treatment of the prisoners would not be forgotten, but would be addressed later with other pressing issues given the primary attention. A large contingent of the intelligentsia surrounded Portland, Oregon, and Seattle, Washington, with power of these locations primarily being solar and other sources of renewable energy, with the entire Pacific Northwest being vaccinated within a short period of time. Iowa, Colorado, Nebraska had the technological expertise to become self-sufficient, but competing goals made it difficult and prolonged the lack of organization. The Dakotas became a de facto command center, happened off the eastern and western grids for 40 years and was self-sufficient out of necessity. The desert states of Arizona, New Mexico, and Nevada, with large indigenous population, never lost their innate survival. The prophecy fulfilled with their final place on the important part of humanity. Key to survival, they, as well as all indigenous people, were the most ready to use and teach skills as it became necessary to return to the land. Humanity forgot the importance.
Girls, we run this mother
of all humans in its survival.
Girls, we run this mother.
I wrote this story, and a lot of the businesses that I highlighted in my Black Excellence are all not only Black, but they're Black female-run businesses. Women and the power of women, female humanity, can't go ignored in the book. With prominent place, with Felicity being one of the heroines, her grandmother holding things down, and even with her cousin, who is male, taking on the Grace Jones persona, the importance of strong women and definitely of strong Black women in this post-COVID apocalypse. And why would I not have Run the World Girls by Beyonce bookending this section of the podcast? And that'll do it for this week. Join me next week as I add more and celebrate more Black excellence in building and businesses. I'm hopeful that I'll be able to create more food porn content for my YouTube channel, and I hope you'll be able to take a look as I revamp DalesAngelsInc.com as I create merchandise specifically to celebrate the Black Lives Mattering here in Tennessee and recognized across the country and across the world. And this is us ruling the world, running the world. All of our lives matter for sure, but definitely Black girls, we run the world. Just saying. And get your groove on as I bounce and rock in my chair to Beyonce.
these millions strong enough to bear children. Then get back to business.